we have talked on this program the last couple of weeks about My Fair Lady opening at the Theatre Royal. Indeed, one of my staff here has been lucky enough to go and see it and said it was sensational. Telling the story, of course, of Henry Higgins. The man who's playing Henry Higgins is Richard E. Grant. Of course, you would know him from many of his varied film roles, and he's been good enough to join me in the studio. How very nice to see you.
Morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Ironically, your wife's a dialect coach.
She is, yeah. She's the female Henry Higgins of England. Yeah. So I've been in training.
I'm sure that irony didn't pass you and her by.
Definitely not, yeah. No, as much as I torture the vowels of Eliza Doolittle, played by the wonderful Taryn Phoebig, I've had a dose of it myself on a weekly basis at home before I came out here.
Does she pick you up on language normally?
On all sorts of things, but after 25 years of marriage, yes. No, she does. She does, quite right. You know, that's... I think it's part of the woman's prerogative in life that you're on a point system of being reformed continuously as you get older.
Have you got children?
We have a 19-year-old daughter, yeah.
So did she also get picked up on pronunciation? I'm being very careful here talking to you.
Yeah, you are. I noticed, Steve,
that I'm going to mangle the language at some point in the next 10 minutes.
No, she's let my daughter to her own devices.
Do you have an ear for accents?
Yeah, I do. I have some facility for it, and I think you're born with that. It's like whether you can dance or not.
Doing dances is the way we South Australians say it, but of course New South Welshmen say dance, not dance.
Yeah.
It's very much too proper to say dance.
So are there big differences between Western and Southern and Northern Australia?
Well, I think there are. And you can certainly pick an Adelaide accent, which is a much more English style of speaking the English language,
right,
as opposed to people who grew up in Sydney. The South Australians would have you believe, Richard, that that's all because all the convicts and the crims got sent here and they were free settlers in South Australia, and so they spoke properly.
Right.
They were the landed gentry as opposed to the criminal underclass.
And is there a big difference between Melbourne and Sydney accents? Can you tell immediately?
Not as much. Right. A little bit. There's individual words, like words for swimming costumes are different, and different cuts of meat,
right,
that you would have. But, right, and of course, you're African.
I know, Swaziland, last gasp of empire. But it is extraordinary that, I mean, I read this thing in the English newspaper just before I came out here that said they'd done a survey, I don't know who they spoke to, but they claimed that 95% of British people were unhappy with their accents, and people from Birmingham were 99% unhappy with their accents. So I think that how you speak and present yourself affects your job prospects and how people see you enormously.
I think that's true. I can pick it up I talk to people on talkback lines all day.
You're right.
Probably take maybe 60 calls a day.
And do you make judgments?
You do a bit.
Yeah.
You do a little bit.
Almost impossible.
I can always pick up a Kiwi, even though they say they've been here 30 years.
Right.
Or a Yank who says he's been here 20. I mean, you don't lose it. But you don't have any. And I can always pick a South African. They have that. I can't actually put into words the description of a South African accent, but
right,
that yarpy way of speaking, you can pick that up, but you don't have any trace.
I think that because Swaziland was last gasp of British Empire, and all the people there were, all the expats were from England.
Including your schoolmates. So your schoolmates you went to school with spoke.
Absolutely, and I've been living in England for the last 26 years, so I suppose I can't really hear. I'm unable to judge my own accent, really.
So if someone listened to you, they'd pick your voice, probably. As where in England would they pick you coming from?
I have no idea.
The south, probably. South, honestly, west,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
What's harder, acting in film or on stage?
I think that the advantage of if you're doing a movie is that you get to, if you mess up, you can redo it. You can do another take. Whereas in the theatre, if you cock up a line, you have to keep going. If you forget your words, the orchestra is going to carry on playing and you will get left behind. So you have to keep going. No matter what happens, you go on.
And if you do make a mistake, do you just have to put it out of your head and charge into the next
scene? You have
to.
And then you have this sort of out-of-body experience where you think, have I done it wrong? Has somebody else messed up? It's a very frightening thing when it happens, but, you know, usually audiences are much more forgiving of mistakes than the actors are.
I think most of us sitting there in the dark miss it. We don't probably pick it up because we're enjoying the occasion so much. And, for most people, it's something they don't do all the time. So they go to the theatre, they see a performance, and we're very forgiving of it.
Yeah. And on the first preview that a couple of weeks ago, I'd only rehearsed for about 3 weeks, and because I was taking over from Reg Livermore, who'd been doing it wonderfully in Brisbane and Canberra and Melbourne before me, and I just dried completely, and I, you know, just turned to the audience and I said, "I'm, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm terribly sorry. I have completely dried. I am but human." And I got a huge round of applause, you know. And I thought that, for me, it was, you know, like falling down a big hole. And you're forgiven for doing that somehow. You know, that it hasn't happened since.
Was that a confident? Well, obviously, you've just answered the question. It wasn't a confidence sapping thing. It's just it's a one-off.
And just happens. I think it's sort of senior moment or synaptic, you know, collapse somehow that, you know, you just blob.
I was once in the middle of an interview with the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister John Howard,
yeah,
and completely forgot what question I was asking halfway through. And there was a television camera filming this particular interview. It was in Bali.
Oh,
and
wow.
I went red. And that, for me, that was, it had never happened. And mm-hmm. I don't know why. I was nervous, perhaps, but yeah. I just completely lost my train of thought and didn't know what I was. I had 5 minutes with the Prime Minister and screwed it up because I forgot what I was talking about.
Were you fired?
No, I wasn't fired. Do your colleagues get into you when you do that?
I think because every actor, or you know, everybody's been through this. You know, people are sympathetic.
Tell me about the project Wawa, which you're so mm-hmm. so well known for and associated with. I mean, that was obviously a labour of love for you.
Yeah, it was a 5-year process of from the first draft of the screenplay to finally getting it made and out into the cinemas. You know, here a couple of years ago, and it was entirely autobiographical, filmed in Swaziland, where everything happened, in a country where a movie had never been made. So that was an amazing, you know, experience for me to go through, really.
Would you go through that process again, or is it too torturous?
Oh, yeah. No, I would. I've learnt a huge amount, you know, what not to put up with from a certain kind of producer that I had the misfortune to work with. But, you know, you learn from all those things. So it all turned out good in the end.
How important are directors to movies?
They are the movie. You know, every single thing that... You know, the writer is the most important, because without the written, you know, without the screenplay, there is nothing. But you essentially are the person that has to make the final decision, no matter what anybody else has said or no matter what the money people say. You are finally the person that says, this is how it's got to be, and this is the version of the movie that I want it to be.
So it's their vision, and you are then interpreting their vision.
Yeah, essentially.
And good directors obviously make it easy for you to do the interpretations.
Yeah, and they incorporate and welcome your collaboration. The nightmare ones are the ones who are control freaks, who don't allow you to do anything, and you're straitjacketed into kind of doing a part. But I think that applies to any profession, I'm sure.
You've worked with Francis Ford Coppola,
mm-hmm.
Martin Scorsese. Now, do they fall into the category you just described?
No, because the great ones like Jane Campion and Scorsese and Robert Altman in particular, who I worked with 3 times, are very collaborative and open to what you have to offer, and they will grab as much as... Yeah, you know, stuff that you give, as much as they offer things. So
what did you do with
way.
Jane?
I was one of the unrequited lovers of Nicole Kidman in her film Portrait of a Lady a dozen years ago.
She's kicked on, Nicole.
She's kicked on. What do you mean?
She's done
by
well.
That? She's done very, very well indeed. Yeah.
Good actress.
Yeah, fantastic actress. Yeah, great, great person.
And a nice person to go with.
In my experience.
Met her at a couple of times. She seems very,
yeah.
very nice.
Yeah.
Speaking of national treasures, John Woods in My Fair Lady with you.
Yeah.
How good fun is he to work
with?
Oh,
he's a fantastic man. Absolutely wonderful. Nancy Hayes and Reese McConaughey and Taron Phoebe. You know, I couldn't have fallen into better company if I tried.
Well, John seems to me to be the sort of bloke who enjoys life.
He does. And when he comes on, the audience just, you know, people go nuts for him. So, and, you know, you can see why. He's one of those people that seems to me, what you see is what you get. There seems no side to him whatsoever, and he's incredibly generous and has a great sense of humour, and people love that.
Yeah, Australians love him, really do. I mean, they kept giving him awards when he was working in television.
Yeah.
He just kept standing up and holding it up and saying thank you.
Yeah, I think he's got 47 Logies.
I asked you what you were reading when you walked in. You are here in Australia. Are you one of those sort of travellers or business travellers who, when you're in a country, you like to read a book about the country you're in because it gives you more of a feeling for it?
Well, I've always been accused of being a sticky beak and being hyper-curious about everything. And I had the great good fortune to meet Robin Davidson the other day, and so I'm reading tracks now.
We should remind,
to read,
of course,
Desert
she was
Places
the
next.
Woman who went across the desert with on her own,
yeah.
with a mob of, is it mob of camels?
Yes, a mob of camels that she had never, she'd never crossed the desert before, never met a camel before, and it's an extraordinary story. So yes, I am. I'm somebody that reads. You know, whenever I go to a new place, you know, I'll try and read as much as I can about it.
And your interest in remote places? Do you think that's a throwback to your birthplace?
Probably. And I'm very. I love Peter Carey's books, and I've just read Tim Winton's new book Breath, which I thought was extraordinary. And
he's met him
at the Auckland Writers Festival last year. So yeah,
he really does take you to places where there is nobody, and he describes it so well.
Absolutely.
It makes you want to be there.
Yeah.
I always want to go and have a swim at an isolated beach when I ever read a Winton book.
Take up surfing.
It makes you feel really good about it, doesn't it?
He does.
Very nice to meet you. And
thank you, Steve.
The show itself, My Fair Ladies, you're in there until just before Christmas, I think?
Exactly, yeah.
I haven't got the date here, but I think you're there until sometime late in December, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. From October 9, Theatre Royal, Tuesday evenings, Tuesday to Saturday, every night at 7:30. And you do matinees on Wednesday, Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock.
You're working hard. They're making you work, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you're there until December. Really nice to meet you. Have a great time while you're here.
And you. Thanks, Steve.
Good on you. Richard E. Grant.